Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chasing the Supernatural with your host, Josh Bender.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Chasing the Supernatural. I am your host, Josh Bender. Tonight, my guest is Rhonda Cottle, and she is the owner of an amazing house located in Glave Spring, Virginia, called the Nickerson Snead House. This house has a long history as well as claims of paranormal activity, and we're going to learn all about it tonight. So we'll go ahead and bring Rhonda on now.
Hi, Josh.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Awesome. Awesome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Yes, this is definitely going to be a good show. We're going to learn all about this wonderful location that you own. But before we get to that, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I like to do a lot. So I'm married with two grown kids. I have a doctorate in education. Taught for a while, but that wasn't really my path. I decided that I liked writing, so I have some paranormal romance books published. And then I decided that I wanted to help other people get published, so I have a small press publishing company, and that's the genre that we typically publish in. Supernatural, paranormal type stuff. And then, of course, my side hobby, my passion really, is the Nickerson Snead House. Just love the house. We came by it kind of accidentally in 2014, and actually we're going to move into it, but it didn't work out that way. So now it's open for all to enjoy.
Now, before you bought the property, were you aware of the paranormal activity that went on then in the house?
Not really. It was a bed and breakfast and then a restaurant later on. And actually ate there one time when it was a restaurant and didn't really know much about the house. Thought it was a lovely home, but, you know, that was it until it came on the market. And I looked at it the second time. We went in to look at it, and I was like, wait a minute, there's much more here than I saw when I came to eat. I don't know what it was the second time I went to the house, but the second time I was hooked.
So you were drawn to the house?
Yeah, like so many. I think everybody that comes to the house says, oh, we've got to come back, and they do.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait to come back.
My paranormal family has grown because of that house. I just feel so blessed that, you know, I've met so many wonderful people, and it's because of the house.
When you bought the house and started working on it, at what point did you figure out that there was some kind of paranormal activity going on?
Okay, that didn't take very long at all. we had a bar and grill in Glade Spring at the same time that we purchased the house. So there was some restaurant equipment left in there where it was a restaurant. And so we thought, well, you know, we can use some of this at our place and we can expand the kitchen. So we did. I had one of my bar managers help me at the house do some cleaning and organizing and stuff. And we had the house maybe 2 months, you know, hadn't really done much in there unless there was a lot of people, you know. So a lot of people around, you don't really pay attention to little noises or whispers, or, you know, you just brush it off as, oh, it's somebody else in the house. But her and I were there about 2 months after we purchased the house, cleaning and organizing, and we had there's actually two instances that were back-to-back days. I had a box. I was coming down. I'll tell you which room it was. You'll know. Anybody else listening, to like, well, I don't know what she's talking about, but it's the room Holly had her sessions in.
Mm-hmm.
It was that room. We were coming out into the hallway. So I was first, and I had my arms full of stuff, a box full of stuff, and she was behind me, and she did too, and she pushed me. "What are you doing? You just about knocked me down." She's like, "Something touched my shoulder." So she ran past me to the back door, threw the stuff down, and ran outside. I went after her, and she said, "I can't go back in, not today." I said, "Okay, we'll leave." So then we went back the next day, and we were working in another part of the house. We were in the kitchen cleaning, and we had a box full of trash, paper trash, just outside the kitchen door. And we heard something, and I thought, "Oh, my gosh, it's a rat." So I said, Jill, it's a rat. What is this? You know, and we looked outside to see if we could find out where the noise was coming from. My first instinct was, it's in that box. So we looked outside the kitchen door, you know, tentatively, like, oh, God, it's going to get us. The rat's going to come out and run across our feet. So I wish I had been a rat. We looked outside the door, and the leaves on the box were going down into the paper trash. If the leaves of the box had popped up, I would think, oh, we had the box stuffed too full, and, you know, it just gave and it popped up. So the leaves were actually going down, like somebody was pushing the top of the box in. So, yeah, we left that day, too, and we didn't return for probably 2 months. Now, we're always, if there's just a couple of us up there, we're always hearing something. And I'm up there a lot working alone, and I hear a lot.
Yeah, I bet. Whenever you first started having the activity, did you think of it as something that you could turn it into something and aim towards the paranormal, or were you still wanting to live in the house?
Actually, we were still going to move into the house. We were you know, looking at renovations and where to start getting pricing and, you know, estimates. It was just like, oh, my God, this is going to take forever to get this place, you know, ready to live in. So, yeah, we were still going to move into it, but the finances just weren't there. So then later we decided to rent it out. It was an antique shop for a while, and there was a lot that happened when the antique shop was there. But then we decided, you know, just about 4 years ago to open it to the public and, you know, have it open as a museum and do things up there historically and paranormal, you know, related. And my husband still says, you know, later on we may move up here. And I'm like, I don't know.
So when did you start looking into the history of the house? Was it before you bought it or while you were fixing it up?
No, it was actually, I didn't really know much about the house until the antique store went there. It was actually my brother who rented the house and had an antique store there. And he's actually the one that found out a little bit of history of the house, and we discovered the lady in blue, who that was, and then we had just like a basic knowledge, you know, not much at all. We knew who built the house. Then about 2 years ago, I started digging deeply and met some of the relatives of the Mason family, who has provided a lot of information from when they had the house and some pictures and things. But we've been digging at the Historical Society in Washington County. So just recently have we really discovered a lot more about the house.
Mm-hmm. Now this is actually goes way back to the 1700s. So there's a it started out as a log house, correct?
Yes, a two-room log cabin. And that is one of the things I just recently discovered. We knew that there had been a two-room log cabin when Dr. Sneed purchased the property. We didn't know who had built it, and we just recently discovered that it was Francis Kincannon who built that, used it as a fort during the French and Indian War and the Revolutionary War.
So it was actually a fort to begin with.
Mm-hmm. There were, I guess there were several buildings there, but there was a two-room log cabin that Dr. Sneed built the Nickerson-Sneed house around.
And there's a lot more than two rooms now.
Yeah, there's a lot more than two rooms. And we cannot discover, we can't figure out why he decided to build around the cabin instead of tearing it down or just building the house somewhere else. But I'm really glad he made that decision because I love those two rooms.
And it's really interesting when you go upstairs and you have the old doctor's office, and you got to go down some more steps and then up some more into another room, and it's not your typical the upstairs of a house. It's I don't know if it was planned that way or if he just kind of built as he went along, but it's really different.
Yeah, I think of it as being layered. They've built layers on layers. He built, I think, parts of it. I don't think he built it all at one time. But then the Mason family added on to it. And then the Walderses, who had it as a bed and breakfast, also built a room onto it. So it's been built on by each of the families. So I guess it's my turn.
Yeah.
Hey, you got any ideas? What can we build?
I think it's good the way it is. Just and even though some of the updates, the hardwood floors that you put in and really look good and just add to the just the style of the home.
Now, what we're trying to do is update it without modernizing it. I want to keep it the old look, but at the same time, make sure it doesn't fall in. The
right.
Floors needed repaired seriously bad. The roof needed to be repaired or replaced actually after the tornado. So there's just a lot that we need, repairs and some remodeling, but not to change it, not to modernize it. That'll never happen.
And to anybody that saw the picture of the property, there's a little building, if you're facing the property, off to the right there. And I believe you said that the Dr. Nickerson, that was also the postmaster?
Yes. They believe, some historians that I've spoke with, believe that the little building was originally his office, outdoor office. They said he may have had two, one for summer months, one for winter months.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was postmaster from, I think, in 1837 or 39 to 1841. And they think then that was used as a parcel drop-off and pickup point. And there was one on the list of the registry for postmasters in Virginia, at one point it had B and N Sneed, so it would have been Betsy and Nickerson as postmasters.
Mm-hmm.
At one point. But I only saw that at one point, so I don't know if maybe she only helped that one year. They only said she helped that one year, or, I don't know.
And also by looking at the picture, I noticed it before I got some aerial shots, but you have this historical property in this old, really old house, and outside the yard, it turns into like present time. There's truck stops and gas stations, and then the storage units on the one side. It just seems like that one piece of the property is still still living in that, you know, in the 1800s. Is it on any historical list or anything like that?
No, we had actually looked about getting it listed as a historical landmark, but there was, to get it on the historical registry was going to take, they had specifications of what we could do, what we couldn't do, events we could do, be held there, events that couldn't be held there. It was just so many stipulations that I was just like, no thanks.
You don't want to be told what to do with your own with your own house.
No, my husband can tell you I don't like being told what to do anyway. He just says, okay, whatever you want, go ahead. He said it's easier that way.
So now the paranormal claims that go on in this house, how many spirits are believed to be in this house?
We have had, when it was the bed and breakfast, there were reports of Betsy Sneed. And the very first report of Betsy Sneed was when the Mason family purchased the house. They had an aunt that, I guess she was a spinster aunt, that had come to stay with them indefinitely. And she spent a couple of weeks there, and they met her at the front door with her bag packed, and she was leaving. And they were like, where are you going? What's going on? And she said, I just had an encounter with Betsy Sneed, and I am leaving. I'll never be back. She wouldn't tell them exactly what happened, just that she had encountered Betsy, and she never did go back. She went to live with someone else. And that was, the Mason family purchased the house in the late 1800s. Just, you know, Betsy had died. I guess Betsy had been dead maybe a year, if that, when they purchased the house, and that was the very first encounter of Betsy. So the Mason family had encounters with her on and off. I had one relative who actually stopped by this past summer and said that he had lived in the house in the 50s and 60s, and that he had had one encounter with her, but only one, that he woke up. It was in the red room, actually, upstairs. That was his bedroom, and he had woken up in the middle of the night, felt like someone sitting on his feet. And he said when he looked, you know, cleared his eyes and looked, he saw Betsy sitting on his feet. And she just poofed in a black cloud of smoke. She was gone. He said that was the only encounter that he had ever had. But the Mason family had encounters with her the entire time they owned the home, I guess. And then when it was the bed and breakfast, the owners there had seen her. Patrons would complain about the woman dressed in, you know, 1800s blue dress that won't seat them. She's the seating hostess, and she's rude, and she just ignored them. And they're like, yeah, that's nobody that works here. That's Betsy. So we have Betsy for sure. And then we have, there was a woman in a long white, presumably wedding gown, that goes up and down the back staircase. I've not seen her. I've had people who have seen her there since we've had the house, but the previous owners have seen, you know, they had seen her a lot. Don't have a clue who that woman is. And then there is Josephine and Douglas Mason. Josephine was 12 and Douglas was, or 10. Douglas was 8 when they died. They're there. I feel sure that they're there. And then there is one other little boy. We had a psychic medium years and years ago say that she thought this was a slave boy who was, you know, probably 8 to 10 years old. So we know of those 5 for sure. And then we've had people that say they've encountered shadow figures. I've seen actually a shadow figure. It was a smaller, like a little animal, a couple of times there. But they've encountered other spirits, which we think that we've had a couple of psychic mediums tell us that they think it's a portal, that there are spirits that come and go. There's only 5 that actually stay.
Now, since it was used as a Civil War field hospital, is there any claims of soldiers?
Yeah, actually, we've had people say that they've seen Civil War soldiers there. And we've gotten lots of EVPs with a male voice. So I'm not sure if that may be William B. Mason or if that is Nickerson's name, or if it may be someone else. But there's been several EVPs with male voices. Or I guess it could be one of the soldiers. But, yeah, there have been claims of sightings of soldiers, but I've never myself have seen one.
Now, you say shadow people. excuse me. Whenever we were back there, whenever Holly had her event back in February, I believe you were giving a tour at the time, and you were upstairs in one of the bedrooms, and there was a picture taken and later posted on the Nickerson Sneed Facebook page. And there weren't any other ones to compare it to, but there was just that one picture. And I'm not sure if it was taken with a cell phone or not. It was kind of grainy. Maybe it was just because it was darker. But it seemed to be the only light that was in there was your flashlight, and you were kind of holding it in your, I think it was your right hand, up in the air. And it was kind of illuminating the floor, and of course the wall and the mirror and everything, and even the bed that seemed like the person was standing beside the bed near the doorway, facing the that piece of furniture with the mirror on it. And there's this, off to the left, there's this, it looks like a shadow figure, but it looks like a fairly tall man, a big man. And apparently there was nobody standing there. I was downstairs at the time. But I believe it was said that there was nobody standing there, and it is a pretty interesting picture. I don't know exactly what to say about it. It's hard to, you know, determine what it is, but you were standing there, so I don't know if you remember when the picture was taken.
I remember giving the tour, but there was no one standing there while I was, you know, telling about the room. It was actually in Betsy's room. Yeah, there was, and the lady that was standing beside that piece of furniture that you were talking about, between the bed and that furniture, said that there was no one standing between her and myself, which would have been where that figure is. An interesting thing about that, it was taken with a cell phone, and it was dark, so it is a bit grainy. But the interesting thing about the picture is that no one fits that description that was there. And it is a very large man, but if you look at the bottom of his legs, it looks like his feet go through the floor. You know, it looks like it starts, his shins are on the floor. So I'm like, okay, it's a shadow. And then I look closer, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's light reflecting from his clothing. And you can see a face. You can see that he has on glasses. But you can't really tell anything about his face other than he has on glasses. But he has reflection, light reflecting from his clothing, his shirt. So I don't know what that was. I don't remember seeing anyone standing there. I definitely did not see that. If I had, if I would not have been standing there, I would have been out the front door. So, yeah. An interesting picture. And I've had some people look at it, and they're like, and all the people that were on the tour, they're like, I don't remember anybody being standing in that location, and it definitely doesn't look like anybody really that was there. And just the fact that it looks like a shadow figure, and his feet's going through the floor, but also he has light reflection. Mm-hmm. He really has no face, but you can see glasses. It's just a bizarre photo. We've got a couple of bizarre photos there.
And the other thing was, I felt anyway, that the way the light was reflecting off the wall and everything, that and how well you could see, I believe it was a bed right there. He's standing, it seems like the figure is standing on the other side of the bed, kind of overlaps him in the picture.
Yes.
But the bed, you can see the blankets on the bed. There's detail, and the blankets on the bed are illuminated. So you would think that somebody standing there, you would see the light would show a little bit more detail on the figure than what's actually in the picture. Because I took the picture, and I brightened it up as much as I could, and it still doesn't bring out any kind of detail or anything like that.
Right. That's what I thought, too. I looked at that. I looked at the way the light was illuminating on myself. The wall, actually the wall where he would have been standing, is illuminated behind him. And like you said, the bed and the floor right there around him. So, yeah, it's a really strange picture. I don't know what to make of it. It's just really a bizarre, unexplainable photo.
I really want to try and recreate that. I want to put the light, you know, just recreate it exactly as it is in the picture and have a person stand there and show, you know, how much detail you can actually see with a real person, you know, standing there. And, you know, even down to, you know, the same flashlight even. And just pointing it at the ceiling like that and recreate it and possibly even capture something like that again. You said you had seen shadow figures before, but nothing of that size.
No, what I saw actually looked like a small dog or a cat. My first thought was it was my cat, and I'm like, wait, my cat's not here. She's at home. What was that? You know, first I'm like, what are you doing? And then I'm like, wait, that's not her. What was that? But I've had several people see the small shadow figure. And then I've had a couple people see larger ones, mostly upstairs at the end of that hallway where our actor's room is. They've seen shadow figures up there, but I've not seen a large one except that strange photo.
I think there's something in the basement. Wasn't there something that was maybe a little unhappy or no, not evil or anything, but maybe a little upset? Or isn't there a man in the basement you were telling us about?
I've had people tell me there's a man in the basement. The only time I really go in the basement is if I have to decorate for Halloween. I store something down there or cut the lights out at the breaker box. If I'm giving a tour, I don't go down in the basement to investigate when we're on investigation. I've been told that there is someone, a man, possibly a soldier, that's in the basement or a slave. There's been a story, a myth, a legend, whatever. I've not found it documented that there was a slave who died, a male slave, an adult male slave, and Dr. Sneed had dismembered him, boiled his bones, then reassembled him in his office and had him, you know, his skeleton reassembled and posed. But when children would come in to be seen by the doctor, they would steal a small bone, you know, finger or toe or whatever. And he got upset and just took the bones out and threw them in a hole in the yard. But at the time, he owned, you know, 400 or 500 or 600 acres, so it's hard to tell which part of the yard at the time and if it's on someone else's property now or even if the story is true. So it could be that the story was true and that may be the slave that's in the basement. I don't know. I don't spend much time down there.
Now, how many groups would you say have come in there and investigated since you opened it up to the public?
We've opened it up to investigations, I think, in December 2013. And we have had probably 20 groups come through at least to do overnight investigations.
And do they share their findings with you?
Most of them do. There's been a couple of groups that have not. They say they will, but they've just not gotten around to it yet. But I would say that probably 90% of the groups have shared their information. They've gotten EVP. There's only one group that said they didn't get anything. They had some questionable personal experiences. But this is actually on the weekend of the metaphysical conference last year. So I'm thinking they're exhausted. They're done with people. We sucked all their energy out and they just left, or they're hiding. They didn't get anything. But there was such a positive group there that weekend that anything that would have been negative probably didn't want to hang around for that, because it was a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Right. Now, you talked about some events earlier, and you do hold various events there, one being the one that that Holly Mollins recently had back in February, where she performed readings and healing sessions, and she even invited some great people to join her and also do readings, tarot card readings, and I think somebody had a pendulum there, and you even did some tea leaf readings, which I had never seen before, and was very interesting to be a part of that. And then there was an investigation in the evening, and had a really good turnout for that. I think we had over, would we have 20 people?
Approximately 20 people, I think, total. So yeah, it was a really good event. It was a good night. The house is not sprawling like Waverly or St. Albans or anywhere like that, so it's hard to get a lot of people there. So 20 to 30 people is a really good, it's a good turnout because there's not too many to be able to effectively investigate in different parts of the house at the same time, but it's also a really good group, you know, it's a good, you know, it's a fair amount of people for the house. It's around 6,000 square feet. But I think Pat's turnout, the Hearts and Spirit last year, it was probably 50 or 65 people there.
It gets
for
crowded.
That weekend. It was, oh my gosh, but it was wonderful. There were so many wonderful people there. So it was amazing, but yeah.
And she's even going to have one this year as well, too, isn't she?
Yes, April 29th. It's only going to be a one-day event this year, but April 29th, it's the Hearts and Spirit.
Great. And you, what other kind of events do you have there?
Well, we have, we started in December, which we had a really positive feedback and a really good turnout for it, a spiritualist investigation, where everything is old school. Pendulums, dowsing rods, we had a spirit board and scrying mirrors. We did not use recorders or EMF detectors or REM pods, even take pictures or videos. We didn't do anything like that. We only did old school. So we're going to try to do some more of those because we had a really good turnout for that. That was back in December. And then we are doing a Paracon, actually, June 23rd and 24th this year. And we do living history. We do, we have a craft festival every year, which we have a huge turnout for that. We do overnight investigations. We do some public investigations, and then we allow for private investigations. We also have murder mystery dinners.
Oh, wow.
And that is a fun. It's just like playing, you know, the movie Clue. It's just like that. It's so fun. Let's see.
What
We're
is
adding
the,
to it every year.
What is the living history?
We have reenactors come in. And they act just like they would back in the day. They make salt in the front yard. Over an open fire on a kettle. They dress up. It's really nice.
Wow. That would be really cool to see. And then the, I don't know if you mentioned this or not, but the Ladies Victorian High Tea?
Yes, we did that last year. We're not sure if we're doing that this year or not, but we had a Victorian High Tea, which was really fun. We did red Victorian pastries. We discussed the Victorian era. We dressed up. As they would have back in the Victorian era. We had our tea, and then we did tea leaf readings. So, and we had Victorian music. We had a pianist to come in and play. So it was really nice.
Will you be doing a living history this year?
We are actually having the reenactors come for the craft festival. They're going to be set up and wandering around the place, and they're going to be making salt. I don't know if we'll be doing an actual, you know, just a weekend of living history. I'm trying to work that out with them. But they're all volunteers, and their work schedules are really iffy. But they will be there for the craft festival at least.
Awesome. That would be cool to see.
And that is June. That's June 3rd.
June 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Now,
I forgot the most important thing. We do a haunted house for 6 weeks out of the year.
Yes,
we start
I was just
at the end of September. Yes. Yeah. Oh, we forgot about that. That's the highlight of everybody's fun. So, we do that from the. I think we're going to start at the third weekend in September this year and run through the first weekend in November. So, it'll probably be 7 weeks this year. We have a huge turnout for that.
I'd like to see that too, because I've seen the house, the way it looks normally. So it would be interesting to see what it's like whenever you have the haunted house set up.
It's funny because people who see the house normally and they come for the haunted house, they're like, "Where the heck are we? Which room is this? Where are we at?" No, that's not where we're at. So they get totally turned around because we put up faux walls and everything just looks totally different. The red room this year was actually two rooms. The year before, it had closing walls. So when you went through, the walls closed on you. So every year it's different. But we had some scare actors who did not see the house before. They only saw it as a haunt a couple of years ago. And so we had a Christmas party for them. And then they came back and they're like, "Whoa, the house really looks like this?" And I'm like, "We didn't know there was a kitchen. Where'd the kitchen come from?" I'm like, "We had it covered up." So, yeah, the house looks totally different.
And I know you mentioned the red room a couple times. The red room is, for people that are listening that haven't been there, that's the doctor's office also, right?
That's the notorious room. Anybody that's been there, if you mention the red room, they usually get cold chills. "Oh, God, the red room." But, it's painted red, most people get a heavy feeling in the room. Some people just can't stand the room. They leave. There's a lot of pops and cracks. I actually heard we were doing an investigation with a small group. I think there may have been eight of us. And we were doing EVP session at Ghost Box. Well, we had turned off the ghost box, and we were just doing EVP, and we were just kind of standing there, talking and not even acknowledging, not even asking questions. We were just talking amongst ourselves, and we heard a woman's voice audibly, right between me and someone else. It said, "Sarah," and we all looked around like, "Who the heck said that?" And nobody had said it, but I went home and 4 weeks later, I woke up in the light. I'm like, "God, that was Sarah Edmondson. Somebody's asking for her." Betsy's niece or her sister, it may have been her sister, one or the other lived with her in Nickerson for a while, and her name was Sarah. But somebody had called out the name Sarah that night. But it took me 4 weeks to realize, who they were asking for. But I'm like, "Who said that?" Nobody said it. So
we have a couple questions from a listener. Have you ever had a bad experience in the house?
I myself have not really had a bad experience. I get creeped out. There's been a lot. I've heard piano play. We have a children's piano that plays upstairs in the doll room, the kids' room, and then the large piano downstairs is played. I get a really creepy feeling sometimes, but I've never had anything up in my face or feel threatened. I've not. I've had people say they feel threatened, and I did fall on the steps once, actually twice, for no apparent reason. And I've had people fall on the steps for no reason. Mm-hmm. A couple of people said they felt pushed. That would be the only thing.
Okay. The other question here, I believe you already answered, but are there parts of the original fort still attached to the house? So that's basically what the house was built around, was the two-room
log cabin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the only remnants of the fort that's left.
And another one, what are your prices for an investigation with a group?
It's $25 a person.
For an overnight?
For an overnight, uh-huh.
There's another one. Have you ever encountered a Civil War spirit?
I have not myself. I have not actually seen anything except for the shadow figure. I have been touched. I've had my clothes tugged, and I've heard a lot, but I've not seen any of the apparitions myself.
Another one. What is your book about? That's the, you write the paranormal romance.
Yeah, I have paranormal romance books. They're about, it's a series. It's called Birthright series, a novel. Birthright and The Choice are the first two. I'm working on the third one now. It's about a young couple that lived, you know, like 300 years ago, and the girl died, but the boy was immortal, and he's been waiting on her for 300 years. And so she dreams about him right before he arrives in her town. And then so the first book is kind of her discovering who he is, and then, you know, they have to fight these evil things that that come up, you know, overcome the obstacles, you know, like romances are. But I have done a book about, it's a twist on Jack the Ripper, and I did a sequel to that. Also, it's called Forbidden Fruit, and the other one is Resurrected. And then I did a book that's a twist on Lizzie Borden. It's called The Music Box Murders. And then I've done a kids series, a fantasy series. The first two of those are out. It's they're called The Glasshouse Children of Ravenshire. So that's currently working on a book about the house. It will be the hauntings and the history of the Nickerson State House. And I hope that will be out by May.
Oh, wow. Already? That's coming quick.
Yes.
How long have you been working on the...
2 years. We've been doing the research for 2 years. So, yeah, it's a long time coming.
Awesome. So, about how many books do you have total? That was another, another question.
I have 9 total.
9. Great.
Mm-hmm. They're all, you can find them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million.
Do you sell them there at your, at the Nickerson Sneed House?
I do. Sometimes it depends on how busy the craft festival is. I'll set up there and sell books. I sell at some of the Comic Cons. We did the Ace Con 1 year in Asheville, which was a load of fun. I met Harry Anderson, and he was so wonderful. He was such a nice person. I always thought, oh, I think he's nice in real life. And he was. He was so nice. Met him and his wife. And then we do RobCon at Viking Hall every year.
Oh, cool. Oh, another question was, how much of a notice do you need to book an investigation?
I mean, we could book within a week if there's no other bookings lined up. That's the thing. We start booking in December for the next year. I had people actually in October this year booking, or last year booking for this year. That's the earliest we've been, you know, started booking for investigations. But you know, if there's not an investigation or any event lined up for a weekend, you know, we could book within a couple of days. It's just a matter of getting an open weekend.
Yeah.
Or during the week. We do, we have people that do it during the week that work weekends. And some people do them during the week, so it's, you know, it doesn't matter.
So you can book any day of the week, and do you do it year-round?
Well, except during the hot season. That we
right,
do not book
right.
during those 7 weeks.
Right. Cool.
Yes. There's heat and water, running water, hot and cold. There's a, you know, a functioning kitchen. So, yeah, we book year-round.
Very cool. I'm trying to see if there was any other question. So, future plans for the Nickerson Sneed House, what kind of, do you have certain renovations planned for this year?
I've got grand plans for that house. But we used our haunt, the funds from the haunt this year, to put in a heat pump and and lay the hardwood floors in the kitchen, and then that long dining area, and then a room downstairs, and we're doing the upstairs hallway this week. We're always painting and, you know, repairing. I guess that's the big renovations for this year. And then, of course, we're, you know, we'll be, we've got, I'm always open to ideas for events. So if anybody listening has an idea for an event, let me know. Because we're always looking for events. So plans for events and stuff like that, I guess we kind of went over. But, yeah, I'm open if anybody has any ideas. But, you know, plans for the house total, I would like, you know, more and more people to just, I would like the house to be full all the time. I like to have people in there, you know, just pretty much daily basis to come in. Because when there's people in that house, the house seems calm and happy. The house is, you know, really active, and there's a lot of creepy stuff going on, you know, all year round, except during the haunt season. During the haunt season, everything's kind of calm, and the house is happy. There's just so many people coming through the house. So I would just love to have that house busy every day, because the house loves it.
Now, do you seem to get more people every year for the haunted house?
Yeah, we've doubled every year so far. This will be our fourth year, and we've doubled each year.
Wow, that's awesome. About how many people? Night, on average, you know, on a weekend, like your big nights are probably what, Friday, Saturday?
Saturday, football games kill us on Friday nights.
Oh, yeah. I think about
terrible.
That.
Yeah. Average weekend, we probably have, I think our best weekend this past year was like 400 people. But again, we're only open for like 4 hours, and it's a small house, so it's,
yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's great. It doesn't seem to be too much else in the area as far as, I mean, it seems to be pretty open as far as like businesses and stuff like that.
Yeah. There's a haunt in Bristol, like 20, 25 minutes away, but that's the only other, you know, thing going on, because it is a small community, small area, so.
Mm-hmm. Now, if people want to book an investigation, an overnight investigation, or maybe have an idea for an event or something like that, would they contact you? Is there a page or with an email address or whatever that they could?
Honestly, I've had people email the house page, and I miss their emails because I'm bad about checking emails. But I get Facebook notifications. So if you send me a PM on Facebook, I'll get it right then. And we usually respond within a couple of hours, depending on what we're doing. Typically, I respond right away. My sister and my daughter and myself both watched, or all three watched the notifications. So there's three of us, so answering notifications. So somebody's going to get it, you know, within a couple of hours, usually within a few minutes. So the best way is just to send us a personal message on Facebook to the Nickerson Tenney House.
Cool. Now, I think that's a different page that I was watching. It was, I'm looking it up here real quick. It was something about what paranormal evidence.
We have a website. It's the Nickerson Tenney House website.
Oh, this is the closed group. It's the Nickerson Tenney House Paranormal Evidence Group.
Yes. That's for people who've been there and they've got evidence they want to post. We'll add them to the group if they want to post things there.
And you also have just the main Nickerson Tenney Facebook page.
The Nickerson Tenney House. And it's Facebook page.
Awesome.
So that's the best way to contact us. Or you can send me a personal message via Facebook.
Now, I know that you said you have two kids, and they're grown up now. And how often do they go over to the house, or do they have experiences as well.
Oh yeah, they have experiences as well. they show up frequently because I'm usually up there working typically every day of the week. I'm up there doing something. So they're usually, you know, they'll stop by at least once a week, each of them will. But yeah, I don't know that my oldest daughter has really had an experience. She doesn't. Yeah, she did actually when it was antique store. Her and her fiance, now husband, and my brother were sitting and just talking on one of the pieces of furniture in the antique store at the time. And there's a spinning wheel that was sitting there, and it just starts spinning. And it just spun and spun and spun. And she's like, that was really creepy. And I found out just recently that spinning wheel is now in my bedroom. I didn't realize that was a spinning wheel. And then my youngest daughter is up there. She's up there quite often, several times a month. But she, her and I actually heard the piano play a few weeks ago. We were up there alone. She had her fiance's birthday party there, and we were putting the cake in the box in the kitchen, and the two rooms over, we hear one piano key, and she just stops and looks. She said, "Was that the piano?" And I said, "Yeah, we got to finish getting this ready." She said, "Oh, let's just go." And I said, "No, we got to get this in this box, you know, because sometimes we have a mic problem. You got to get this in the box, you know." And so she said, "Well, we'll just leave you here on the table." And I said, "No, it has to go in there." And she said, "In the room where the piano just played." And I said, "Yes." But yeah, they've both had experiences there.
Oh, that's funny. I thought there was another question here, but I think we got them all. Yep, we sure did. We have about 8 minutes left. If there's anything, any other stories you have about the house that you can share with us?
The house, my husband's a non-believer, but the house has almost made him a believer. we were there, I had been telling him for years, you know, the first year of our haunt, my oldest daughter, she'll come in, and her first words to me is, "Hey," you know, just like that. And the first year of the haunt, we had the house set up, and it was just me and one of my brothers and a friend, and he and her were in the front parlor, and I was in the kitchen. You know, I was walking back toward the kitchen. I was almost to the kitchen door, and I heard her say, "Hey," and I turned around, and I started saying, "Hey," and she's not there. So I got up front, and I said, "Hey, is Brittany up here?" And he's like, "No, nobody's here but us. Why?" I'm like, "Okay, crap." So I told my husband that years ago. So then this year, we're in the front parlor, and we've taken all the batteries out of the walkies and replacing them for the, you know, the coming night. This was one of the nights of the haunt. We had all the batteries out. All the blockies were face down. And then I was pulling out batteries out of the pack, you know, getting ready to plug them into the walkies. And somebody said, "Hey," and it sounded just like it came from one of those walkies. It was right there beside me. And he turned around and he said, "Did you say?" And my mouth is hanging wide open. My eyeballs are big as saucers. And I was just like sheepishly white. And he said, and then before he could even say, "Did you say that? Did you say something?" It went, "Hey," and he looked at me and said, "I guess not." He said, "You know, I can finish these after a while. Let's just go on home now." So he said that. He has admitted that that was strange, but there's really no explanation for that. But, yeah, it's trying to make a believer out of him.
Now, he isn't there as often as you are, is he?
No. He works out of town, so. But he, when he does come home, he goes up to check out the house and see what we've done. He does get to come home for the entire haunt season, so that's fun. He's up there for, you know, the entire 6 weeks. So, yeah, he's up there a lot. Those 6 weeks, they're daily. So.
But how many people do you get to volunteer to be a part of the a haunted house?
Oh, wow. One night at Fairmont, it's a small house, you know, comparatively to other haunt events, roughly 6,000 square feet. So that's not a lot of place to put a lot of people. But we had one night 35 people who showed up to volunteer. We have several volunteers that can't come every night.
Mm-hmm.
We probably have around 25 or 30 full-time volunteers that help religiously. And then they'll bring people to help. And we usually get, you know, a couple of their friends to help on and off, or who's just other people that we know that like to volunteer but can't volunteer often. But one night we ended up with 35 people there. So we had a good night that night.
Wow, that's great.
Typically, we have around 20 to 25 volunteers.
Mm-hmm. One more quick thing. Tell us about the Paracon in June and what all that entails.
Okay, the Paracon is 2 days. We will have speakers and vendors. We'll also be doing some investigations that night. I think they're probably going to do both nights. They had talked about maybe Friday night or Saturday, but I think we've decided to do both nights. The tickets, I believe, are going to be $25 a person, but that's for both days and investigation. So should be fun. I'm excited about it. I think we'll have a really good turnout.
And what do you charge for a vendor or maybe a paranormal team that wants to come and set up a booth?
I believe that is also going to be $25.
Okay, cool. And you'll have that advertising. You'll be advertising that on the Nickerson Sneed Facebook page as well, right? So if you follow along with that, you'll see what's coming up and how to participate in the Paracon and the other conferences and stuff that goes on there.
Oh, yes. We typically put in January and sometimes in December a tentative schedule of events. We'll have dates for events that we have dates for and things that are coming that we don't have dates that we think we know about where it's going to be and which month it'll fall in. We'll put that, but we'll put tentative on there, and that way they'll know, you know, keep looking. Typically a couple of months before an event, we start putting it out there and letting people know how much, the date, you know, the speakers. We'll list the speakers and some of the vendors and just let them know how they can pay for their tickets. Typically for things like that, we charge in advance just so we know how many people, you know, we can accommodate, because we usually cap it. So, and we take PayPal and credit cards. So, I mean, it's really easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just keep a close eye on the page and they'll know everything that's going on there.
Awesome. Well, we got a couple minutes left. I want to thank you, Rhonda, for coming on the show and talking about this wonderful house and everything that goes on there. I think it's great, everything that you're turning this into and the events that you have and everything. And I really look forward to coming back there and investigating and just to visit.
Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to having you guys back out to do an investigation. I'm really excited to see what you get. I'm always excited when somebody investigates. I'm on pins and needles. What did you get? Because usually when they come for the walkthrough and I give it a little tour, somebody gets something during the day when we do our initial walkthrough before the investigation. Mm-hmm. So that's not untypical. I mean, that's highly likely, you know, that's going to happen. So I'm really excited about having you guys come out and do an investigation and see what you find.
Yes, we can't wait. And we are one of those teams that will share what we get.
I appreciate that, because I'm always excited for, you know, to get, because everybody experiences something different. Some people get more EVPs, photos. I mean, it's just a wide range of what different teams get, and it's just like the house wants to do one thing one particular night, or maybe it's just one particular thing for this particular group, because some groups only get certain things. It's strange.
Certainly can't wait to come down there. And thanks again, Rhonda, for being on the show. And I also shared the link for the Nickerson Snead House Facebook page on my show's page, the Chasing the Supernatural page. So anybody who wants that to follow that can get that from the Chasing the Supernatural Facebook page.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Josh. I really appreciate you having me on tonight.
Well, thank you. I had a lot of fun. And
I did too.
Yeah. So you have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. One thing I want to add here before I end the show is a couple of our hosts for the Vibe Radio Network have started this free online magazine, and it comes out released every 2 months. Alex and Helena King, Ryan Jones, Holly Mullins, and others contribute to this magazine, and it comes out every 2 months. It's free. It's about all things paranormal. They have team interviews, location reviews, conspiracies, and ghost stories, and more. So you can find that on livingparanormalmagazine.com. And again, that's every 2 months. I think there's an issue that's coming out for April. So if you want to check that out, I'll also share that link on Chasing the Supernatural Facebook page. Again, thanks everybody for listening tonight. You've just listened to Chasing the Supernatural on the Vibe Radio Network.